Gospel of John chapter 21 and verse 1. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias, and in this way he showed himself. Simon Peter, Thomas called Didymus, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples were together. On this occasion in the Gospel of John in chapter 21, it follows from that which was just mentioned in chapter 20, as the phrase "after these things" indicates. Chapter 21 is one of those chapters that by the time we come to the end of the book, we kind of want to speed through it and finish the study, but there's a lot to learn from this chapter. As a matter of fact, we're going to see in this chapter something that has something that's transpired in times past in one of the apostles' lives that we ought to be reminded of, and that is the apostle Peter. We're going to see on this occasion, as the disciples are back in the region of Galilee, they're fishing again. That was their occupation before Jesus had called them to be disciples. And so they're out fishing again. But Jesus appears to them as he is on the shore of the Sea of Galilee and standing around a coal of fire. A coal of fire. Have you heard and read about a coals of fire before, someone standing around it? It was Peter who stood around the coals of fire and denied Christ three times. We're going to see in this chapter that Jesus, without having mentioned that directly, is going to bring that back up to Peter. The occasion for this chapter, of course, is a continuation, you might say, that began in chapter 13 of preparing these disciples, especially his closest disciples that he named apostles for their apostleship, and their witness of his resurrection. So beginning in chapter 21, in verse 1, after these things, Jesus showed himself again. We're going to learn later on in the context that this will be the third time in verse 14 that Jesus showed himself to his disciples. Now, the disciples in the context are more than the apostles, because there are seven disciples mentioned in verse 2, but all of them are not apostles. So when he says disciples here, he has in mind apostles plus others. So we have to keep that in the context. So this is the third occasion that Jesus had appeared to his disciples. The other occasions, of course, we had read about in the gospel accounts. And the third occasion that he had appeared to his disciples has reference specifically to his apostles. But there were also other disciples on those occasions as well. But he specifically addresses his apostles, particularly when he gets to Peter later on in the context. So after these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias, known as the Sea of Galilee. Luke records it as the Lake of Gennesaret. In the Old Testament, it was referred to as the Sea of Chinneroth. And so it's identified by different names, referred to as the Sea of Tiberias because there was a city on the western shore of the Sea of Galilee named Tiberias. Of course, Herod the Great had built that city and named it Tiberias after Tiberius Caesar. And so, being a prominent city, the Sea of Galilee is called the Sea of Tiberias. And in this way, he showed himself. Note the disciples that are gathered on this occasion. Simon Peter, Thomas called Didymus, or the twin, Nathanael of Cana. Nathanael was not an apostle, but he was a disciple. So Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, then the sons of Zebedee, We know who they are. Though they're unnamed here, oftentimes they're referred to as the sons of Zebedee. Does anyone know who they are? James and John. So we know that John is among them, John the Apostle. We believe that he is the disciple whom Jesus loved, and he's going to be referred to later on in this chapter as such, if he is the one under consideration. So the sons of Zebedee and then two other of his disciples were together. Two other disciples who are not named. Who they were, we simply do not know. We could only speculate. Could have been a couple of other apostles or just disciples in general. But Simon Peter said to them, that is, Simon Peter said to those six present, "I'm going fishing." They said to him, "We're going with you also." They went out. Note that, they went out. They went out of the building, wherever they were, located around the Sea of Galilee at this time. Remember, they had spent a great deal of time in Capernaum. That's where Peter lived. And Jesus had carried on much of his ministry out of the city of Capernaum. And that's where they may be, but we simply do not know. They went out and immediately got into the boat. And that night, they caught nothing, so they went fishing in the night. We might wonder, well, why did they go fishing in the night? Well, a lot of people today still fish in the night, but during this particular period of time, there wasn't a great deal of means of preserving your catch for very long. They didn't have ice houses like we have. They couldn't bring the fish into the boat and throw them on a pile of ice or put them in ice storage. And so they would fish at night and then sell their catch in the morning or eat their catch in the morning. So they're fishing at night. Verse 4, John 21, "But when the morning had now come," the word translated morning here means early morning, that is at dawn when the sun comes up. "So when the morning had now come, Jesus stood on the shore. Yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus." Now we could perhaps speculate in regard to why they did not know it was Jesus. Maybe they were kept from identifying him. John 20 and verse 14, back in John 20 and in verse 14. "Now when she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there and did not know that it was Jesus." Had some miracle been performed that kept Mary Magdalene from knowing whether that was Jesus on that occasion? Same thing on this occasion. We simply do not know whether they just did not recognize him at first or whether there was some kind of miracle performed to keep them from recognizing him. Verse 5, "Then Jesus said to them, 'Children, have you any food?'" Children or little children. A term of endearment. And it's kind of interesting that the Apostle John would use that phrase in his epistles, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, as he often referred to those to whom he was writing as little children. And so on this occasion, Jesus calls out. Remember, they're out on the Sea of Galilee. We'll learn later on they're about 100 yards from the shore. And so they're a good distance out in the water, and that might be one of the reasons why they didn't immediately recognize him. But he calls out to them, "Have you any food?" The word food here could be translated meat, could actually be translated fish, because we see in the very next verse that's what's under consideration. Do you have any food? Do you have any meat? Do you have any fish? That is, have you caught any fish? They answered him, "No." He said to them, and this is how we understand that the word food or meat, as it is sometimes translated, indicates that it's fish under consideration. And he said to them, "Cast the net on the right side of the boat and you will find." You'll find some. The word some has been added. You'll find some what? You'll find some food. You'll find some meat. You'll find some fish. That's where you're going to catch the fish. Now, why the right side of the boat? Well, that's no one knows, but Jesus knew where the school of fish was, even though he couldn't wasn't present in the boat and looking down through the water, but he knew where the fish was. He is deity, the Son of God. So they cast, and now they were not able to draw it in because of the multitude of fish. Therefore, that disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, note this, the disciple whom Jesus loved. First time we saw that was back in chapter 13. Remember, this disciple whom Jesus loved was leaning on his breast during the Passover meal, the occasion in which Jesus instituted the Lord's Supper. And Peter asked him, because Jesus had made the statement that one of the apostles was going to betray him, and Peter asked him, well, who is it? And John turned and asked Jesus who it was. And later on, as a matter of fact, that very thing is going to be brought up in verse 20 of our context. So we see where this context of this chapter goes. It goes back to chapter 13. You might say it would be hard for us to comprehend and understand what's taking place here had we not already studied chapter 13 and that which follows it. So therefore the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, and note what he said, it is the Lord. Now someone recognizes him. Was he recognized because he told them where to catch fish? We simply do not know, but if this individual is John, whom we suppose it to be, he recognized Jesus as the Lord. Now oftentimes, the Lord has been mentioned here several times in the context lately, as Mary Magdalene even referred to him as Lord. Remember, they didn't understand him as Lord as we understand him today. He was their master. Lord is a title of respect, sometimes translated master. He's the teacher. They're his disciples. And so it's the Lord. It's the master. It's not that he is the Lord, the Son of God. Oh, they had confessed that, as Thomas had earlier in chapter 20, my Lord and my God. But they didn't fully comprehend and understand it completely. And we'll see that even when we come to the book of Acts, that they still believe that he is just a man and that he's going to establish an earthly kingdom and rule and reign from the city of Jerusalem. And so they're still not fully persuaded and convinced that he is deity, the Son of God. So verse 7 again, John 21, therefore the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, it is the Lord. Now note what Peter did on this occasion. On earlier occasions, the witness of Jesus' resurrection had testified and bore witness to that resurrection, but the apostles had not believed. We can go back in the context, but we'll not take time to do that. Remember when Mary Magdalene, one of the disciples, came to the apostles and told them that the tomb was empty. Well, they didn't believe her witness. John believed their witness because he saw that the tomb was empty. Well, I believe it's empty. Later on, when Jesus was with his disciples, his apostles, they didn't believe, and he had rebuked them for their unbelief, as he rebuked Thomas for his unbelief. They didn't believe the witness or the testimony of others that they had seen. You might say they had to see it for themselves. As Mary Magdalene told the apostles, well, the tomb is empty. Well, Peter and John had to go see it for themselves. As Thomas was told by the other apostles, we've seen the resurrected Lord. Thomas said, unless I see him, put my finger in the scars in his hand and my hand in his side, I'll not believe. He had to see it in order to believe it. But note what Peter does on this occasion. He believes the witness. John says it is the Lord, and Peter responds in a most appropriate way. Now when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, that is his outer tunic, for he had removed it, and he plunged into the sea. He threw himself into the sea. Plunged here, same Greek word translated cast, as they cast the fishing net into the sea. They threw it into the sea. And so Peter puts his robe around him, girds it to him, and throws himself into the sea to swim to shore. Now that was a task within itself, being about 100 yards from the shore. Just think about that. But on this occasion, Peter, understanding and believing the witness of John, does just that. You might say he takes immediate action to go to Jesus. Verse 8, but the other disciples came in the little boat. The other disciples. So there's 6 other disciples. They've caught this large catch of fish now. They're dragging the net behind the boat with the fish. And they're headed toward shore now. But the other disciples came in the little boat, for they were not far from the land, but about 200 cubits, dragging the net with the fish. About 200 cubits, about 100 yards from the shore. Verse 9. Then as soon as they had come to land, they saw a fire of coals there, and fish laid on it, and bread. They saw a fire of coals. I mentioned earlier the fire of coals back in chapter 18 and verse 18, where Peter's standing around the fire of coals with the enemies of Christ. And it is on that occasion that he denies Christ 3 times. Now that's significant because later in the context, Jesus is going to ask Peter 3 times, do you love me? And all of this is tied together. That's why Jesus asked him 3 times, because he has denied him 3 times. And he brings that back to his mind on this occasion. But here in verse 9, as soon as they had come to the land, they saw a fire of coals there, and literally a fish, just one fish. One fish laid on it, and bread, supposedly a loaf of bread, as they would bake the bread in cakes or loaves. So you got one fish laying on the coals of fire, and you've got the bread. Then Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish which you have just caught. So bring some of the fish, plural, which you have just caught. So they want to put some more fish on the fire because just one fish is not enough. Verse 11, John 21. Simon Peter went up and dragged the net to the land. He went up. Note that he went up. He went up into the boat. Remember, the net is being dragged to the shore behind the boat. So he goes up into the boat and he drags the net to land full of large fish, 153. And although there were so many, the net was not broken. Jesus said to them, come and eat breakfast. Yet none of the disciples dared ask him, who are you, knowing that it was the Lord? So come and eat breakfast. Come and partake of a meal. The early meal of the day, a very small meal. But he invites them to dine with him. It is a very affectionate way to get close to one, is to dine with one. Dining with one is often used in the scripture in regard to having fellowship with others, being of close social relationship, even used in the sense of partaking of the blessings in the kingdom of God often. So come and eat breakfast. Yet none of the disciples dared ask him, who are you, knowing that it was the Lord? They knew it was the Lord, but evidently, as we saw earlier, they didn't recognize him as such at first. Again, perhaps because of some miraculous thing that had occurred, or perhaps because they were a distance from the land. But we also learn from this that they always did not recognize him when they saw him, knowing that it was the Lord. They knew it was the Lord, but for some reason there may have been some question in their mind. Verse 13, and then Jesus came, and he took the bread and gave it to them, and likewise the fish. So the fish that has been baking on the fire, he gives to them, and he gives them the bread. Verse 14, this is now the third time Jesus showed himself to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. We'll go back in the context after his resurrection, and we can count those times up, and we note that. So verse 15 now, so when they had eaten breakfast, this is after the eating of the bread and the fish. When they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? Now, in the context here, we're going to see that evidently Jesus and Simon Peter walk away from the other group of the disciples. Because we're going to notice down in the context that as they're walking along, they turn and see John, if he is in fact the disciple whom Jesus loved, following. Verse 20, then Peter turning around saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following. So the implication is in the text that after they've consumed the meal, maybe Jesus and Peter, they walk away from the group, maybe down the shore some. That seems to be the implication. And so when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? Do you love me more than your fellow disciples? No doubt that's what he's asking. That seems to be who's under consideration by that pronoun these in the context. Surely he's not asking them, do you love me more than these fish? Do you love me more than the fishing? No. Do you love me more than these disciples? Now, why would he ask him, do you love me more than these disciples? Do you love me more than your fellow disciples love me? Jesus would ask him that because of what Peter had declared back in chapter 13. Just turn back with me, if you will, back in chapter 13. Back in chapter 13, remember this is the occasion of the Feast of the Passover when Jesus institutes the Lord's Supper. And on this occasion, he's preparing them for their apostleship and their witness of him as apostles. John 13, verse 36 and following. Simon Peter said to him, Lord, where are you going? Jesus answered him, where I am going, you cannot follow me now, but you shall follow me afterwards. Note what Peter says now. Peter said to him, Lord, why can I not follow you now? I will lay down my life for your sake. And Jesus answered him, will you lay down your life for my sake? Most assuredly I say to you that the rooster shall not crow till you have denied me three times. So Jesus brings that up on this occasion. Simon, do you love me more than these? Do you love me more than these other disciples? Do you love me more than your fellow disciples? Because remember, on one occasion you said you were willing to lay down your life for me. That's how much you said you loved me. You were willing to sacrifice your life. So do you really love me? Do you love me more than your fellow disciples? Note he said then, he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, feed my lambs. Feed my lambs. This, you might say, is a commissioning of the Apostle Peter. Feed my lambs. That is, provide them with feed, with nourishment. Now, how is Peter going to be able to do that? Well, later on, he will be inspired of the Holy Spirit. He'll have the Word of God. He will feed them with the Word of God. He'll provide nourishment for their souls. Who are the lambs of Christ? Same as the sheep of Christ in the context. There are people who belong to Christ. Remember back in John chapter 10, Jesus declared himself as the true shepherd. And he has sheep. He even had some sheep that were not yet of that fold. And so he goes on to say in John chapter 10 that there would be one shepherd and one fold, be made up of both Jews and Gentiles. And so having learned that in times past, we can put all of this together. He's commissioning the Apostle Peter to feed, tend, and take care of his people, his sheep. He said to him again, a second time, that is, Jesus speaks to Peter again, a second time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my sheep. Now, he uses a different word here. Feed, the first time, here, tend, but there's nothing understood differently about it. Tend here means to shepherd. It is a word from used in connection with elders as shepherding God's people. Later on, Peter, in his writings, would refer to himself as an elder. So he would indeed be a shepherd of God's people. But here, we're not to take these words feed and tend and sheep and lamb as though they're different words in the Greek. They're used synonymously. Much like the word love in our context. A lot of times people will make a big distinction between the two words translated love here, but they're just being used synonymously in the context. Jesus doesn't mean anything by them in regard to using different words. We do the same thing in our own conversations today. And we've seen this several times in the study of John where different words are used, but yet they're used synonymously. For example, back in chapter 20 and in verse 21, chapter 20 and verse 1, peace to you, as the Father has sent me, I also send you. Two different Greek words translated send there. As the Father sent me, that's the word from which we get our word apostle. But the second word sent is just a generic word for sent. But they're used synonymously. And so are many of the words in this context here. Two different words for love in the context. Two different words for sheep and lamb, though they mean the same thing. A lamb is a sheep, just a young sheep. And tend and to feed. Two different Greek words, but feeding is involved in shepherding or tending. And so different words in the Greek that we're not to make a big deal of in the context. What's to be understood here is the questions that he asked. Do you love me? Again, verse 16, he said to him again a second time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my sheep. Now, why did he ask him a second time? Because Peter was asked a question the second time by the enemies of God's people. And he denied Christ. He's getting an opportunity now not to deny him, but to confess him to his face. And so that's all that is being done here. You might say Jesus is giving him an opportunity to confess that which he had confessed before. He had declared his love for him before in times past and was willing to lay down his life for him. Well, is that true, Peter? You're willing to lay down your life for me? Do you really love me to that extent? So he's giving him an opportunity to confess that. Verse 17, he said to him the third time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Peter was grieved. He was grieved. He was brought to sorrow. Why? Because Peter understood what was happening. Peter understood what was happening. He's now asked the third time by Jesus himself. Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, note what he said, Lord, you know all things. You know all things. The Lord knew that Peter had denied him three times. Remember, as a matter of fact, when he denied him the third time, Jesus turned and looked at him and he went out then. Went out of the courtyard of the high priest and wept. The Lord knew what had taken place, and he's given Peter opportunity now, you might say, to make it right. Peter said, "You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, note what he said, "Feed my sheep." Give them food. How's he going to do that? Well, he's going to feed them with the word. That's what he's going to do. And he begins to do it on the day of Pentecost as he preaches what we refer to as the first gospel sermon. Verse 18. Note it begins with this phrase, "most assuredly." Truly, truly, verily, verily. Remember what those words mean in the Greek? I tell you a most certain truth. So now Jesus is going to prophesy about something. He said, "I say to you that when you were younger, you girded yourself." You girded yourself. That is, you dressed yourself. You even put your belt around your waist and girded your clothing tightly against yourself. And you walked wherever you wish. That is, you dressed yourself and you did whatever you wanted to do. You went wherever you wanted to go. But when you are old, that is, when you grow old, Peter, you will stretch out your hands, note this, and another will gird you. Same word in the Greek. Not another's going to dress you. It's another's going to bind you. Because in the first century, their clothing was bound to them by a girdle or by a belt or by a sash. It was tied around them. The first girding yourself is you dressed yourself and you tied your clothing around you. Here, someone else, they're not going to gird you, that is, dress you, but they're going to bind you. They're going to tie you up. They're going to stretch out your hands and tie you up. Now, what does that have reference to? Well, in the first century, when one was crucified, as we just studied about the crucifixion of Christ, remember, Christ bore his cross. More likely, he bore the cross tie of the cross. What they would do is they would lay that cross tie across your shoulders and bind it to you, tie it on you, and you would carry it to your place of crucifixion. And that's what we see in this picture. So when Peter is young, he dresses himself and he goes wherever he wants to go. He's able to direct his life. But as he grows older, you will stretch out your hands and another will bind you. They'll tie you up and carry you where you do not wish, where you do not want to go. I want you to notice here that as Jesus prophesies about what's going to happen to Peter, remember what Peter had said back in chapter 13. "I'm willing to give my life for you, Lord. This is how much I love you." Well, Jesus had just asked him, "Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? Are you really willing to give your life for me?" Well, Jesus says that's what's going to be required of you. That's what's going to be required of you. Because you're going to have to give your life for me. You're going to follow me as I went to the crucifixion. You're going to be crucified. And historians tell us that Peter was crucified at Rome. May have been crucified upside down. We do not know that for certain, but it's believed that he was crucified there during Nero's reign. Note now the very next verse, and we're almost out of time. Verse 19. "This he spoke." What did he speak? That in verse 18. "This he spoke, signifying by what death he would glorify God." So, the death of Christ glorified God. The death of Peter would glorify God. If Peter carried out the commission faithfully that Christ had given him. "Tend my sheep, shepherd my sheep. Be my apostle, be my witness, follow me." So this he spoke, signifying by what death he would glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he said to him, note this, "Follow me." Follow me. That is, obey me to the point of giving your life. Is that not what we learn in the book of Revelation? "Be faithful unto death, and I'll give you the crown of life." That's what he's calling upon Peter to do. Follow me. Be faithful unto death. Obey me. That's what he wants him to do. All right. We're almost out of time, a couple of minutes, but we'll not get into this next section. But I just want you to notice, then Peter turning around and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following. So as they're walking along the seashore and Jesus has been conversing with Peter, John the Apostle, if he's the one under consideration, is following behind. Peter, James, and John were always very close, and they were always with one another. James is here on this occasion. He could have been following as well. The implication of the context seems that maybe all who were with Jesus on that occasion might have been following at a distance, since this apostle John was. And then Peter is concerned about John as well. He's concerned about John. Well, what about John? Well, Jesus is going to tell him, you don't be concerned about him. You be concerned about yourself. You follow me. Doesn't matter what he does or what happens to him. What matters is whether you follow me. You obey me. That's what really matters. And we'll see that as we'll end our study of this book next Lord's Day morning and then get into our study of the book of Acts. Questions or comments? Thank you very much for your kind attention this morning.